What moves slower than science? The government. Right?
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Silence Voices of MST. I'm your host, Rachelle Smith. This is part two of Brian's story. As you know, we're in a new format, so part two is going to be his life after separating from the military. And not gonna lie to you, it's pretty colorful, and I'm sure it resembles a lot of people's, where you're just fumbling around, you're not really sure who you can trust, what to do. Maybe you're coping with some not so healthy things. But in this section is a turning point in Brian's story where he comes across a magazine article that changes his life. So I'm going to let him tell that part. All I wanted to mention was that if this story is having an impact on you, please go ahead and leave us a comment or review 5 stars on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And also on YouTube. The visibility definitely helps. And please feel free to give Brian a shout out on our social media or even leaving him a message on Salute to Survivors. And just stay tuned till the end of the show so that I can share some more updates and details about the Silence Voices and our direction from here. So we're gonna let Brian take it away.
When I got out, I got a degree in marketing. Worked for a couple of years. I got married, got unmarried, went to grad school, got an MBA, worked about a dozen years in corporate, worked my way up, miserable every step of the way, lost, flashbacks, yeah. Nightmares, all that stuff constantly, even today, it's constantly. And every year or a couple of times every year for 14 years, I would look online and see if I could find someone to like help me out with this. And it was the earlier days, right? Like, so it was harder to find information. I just hit dead end after dead end after dead end. And like I said, I worked my way up corporate. I was in New York, New Jersey area, working for Jose Cuervo. I was running strategy for sales and marketing, running C-level meetings and stuff like that. But I was still miserable. And I had this freeze. Like I froze at my desk for like 3 months. I just stared at my computer screen every day for like 3 months, and there was something that my boss wanted to get done. It was like $2 million discrepancy with $500 million company or however much it is. You know, it's Jose Cuervo, it's a huge company, but like in the grand scheme of things, it's not that much money, but it's significant, right? And it took me 3 months to figure it out, and it was a pretty easy problem, pretty easy solution. So I got fired shortly after that. At that point, I was like, man, I don't know what to do with my life. You know, what am I going to do? I was early 30s. I'm like miserable in my corporate career, miserable in everything. I decided that I was going to drop everything and move to China and figure it out. All right.
Plot twist. Okay.
Plot twist, big time, right? Big time plot twist. Yes, I decided to do that. Took a job at a university teaching like business skills in English. But just before I left the country, I was having dinner with my parents and my sister and her family at their house in New York. I'm doom scrolling Twitter. I happened to come across this article that it's from GQ. It's called "Son, Men Don't Get Rich." Okay, and I was like, oh shit.
Yeah.
Click. Clicked on that, and I started reading through this thing. It was basically an expose with, like, I don't know, a dozen or so other men that had been in the military, MST survivors throughout the years, from, like, mom to present, maybe even earlier than that. But they're talking about the things that they'd experienced and how it's affected their lives and stuff. And I was like, holy shit, like, that's me. Like, what the fuck? And then toward the end of it, it said, if you or anyone you know has experienced something like this, contact NVLSP. Which is National Veterans Legal Services Providers. I remember when I was transitioning out, I remember they said, if there's anything wrong with your records, you've got like 15 years to figure it out, right? You file a claim with the NDRB, right? 15 years. But once you hit that 15 year mark, then it goes to the archives and you got to go to BCNR. It's going to take you decades to get it corrected, blah, blah, blah. So I was like, shit, it's been like, that was 2014. So it'd been 12 years since I'd been discharged, 13 years since the incident. I was kind of like, well, if I don't if I don't send an email, like it's like one last chance kind of thing. So I'm like, fuck it, I just put together an email. I'm like, hey, this is my little bit about my story, blah, blah, blah. Send. Hit send, and then I flew to China, like, I don't know, a couple weeks later, went to Beijing. While I was there, I got an email from this law firm. They decided to pick up my case, pick up my claim. And basically over the course of, I mean, the China thing's a long story, but like, so I'm not going to get into that, but that's, China's where I found my path as a storyteller, the writer and producer. Luck would have it, I met somebody that needed a producer for this friendly soccer match between Manchester United and Liverpool in Australia. So I jumped at that chance and I produced that. I also met this guy at a coffee shop while I was doing that, who happened to be an Oscar-winning movie producer, showed me a trailer that he was working on, and I like that's this chill went down my spine, and I'm like, that's what I gotta do. I gotta tell stories. Telling stories, right? And like telling stories that matter. That's kind of how I found my path. But like while I was there, the majority of the 4 years that I was in Beijing, that's when we were doing a lot of this legal process. But over the
Nice.
course of 8 years, from 2014 until 9 years, I guess, 2014 until 2023, October, I think October 2023, my lawyers and I, we worked on the case billion times, a billion different ways. And first through the NDRB, we were able to file a successful claim that got my discharge shifted upwards to general under honorable conditions, which that paved the way for my VA benefits,
Right, okay.
healthcare, mental health care and stuff like that, getting my claims processed. Still took a while to make those happen, probably 2 years or so. And we filed a claim with the BCNR, Board for Corrections of Naval Records. That one with every branch. Filed the claim. I'm like, I have a general under honorable conditions now. And I'm dipping my toes in like VSOs and other veteran organizations, right? I'm trying to like, get involved and like, be a part of this thing, right? And
Right.
every organization I tried to get involved with, they're like, well, it's honorable, yes, but it's general under honorable conditions. You have to explain to us why it's general. And so, cool. Now I'm forced to tell my story just because I want to participate in something. I was pretty much done with my VA claims and everything seemed to be pretty much wrapped up. But I told my lawyers, look, this thing with the general and having to explain this stuff, I'm like, this sucks. Like, I should have had an honorable discharge. I should have been medically retired. And they're like,
Right.
well, we can try for the honorable, but the odds are stacked against you. But we'll shoot for changing the reason narrative reason for separation from misconduct to secretarial authority, which is basically a blanket statement, just covers it up. And I was like, we didn't come this far just to come this far. You know what I mean? I should have been medically retired. I should have been honorably discharged. I've been dealt an injustice for 20 something years, right? Like, give me a fucking break. Like, odds are stacked against you. And I'm like, they've been stacked against me from day one, as far as this stuff is concerned. Let's fucking go for it. We put together a case and submitted the claim at the BCNR. I think it took 15 months to the day from the day we submitted it. They looked at everything, laid everything on the table. The drug use, the other items of misconduct, just put it all out there. The panel reviewed it, including a mental health professional, and in a unanimous decision, they all stated that all of my misconduct was a direct result of my PTSD because I didn't have any misconduct beforehand. So they said all of that was a direct result of my PTSD, and I was halfway through a med board process, which should have been completed. So they changed my discharge to full honorable discharge, medical retirement.
That's amazing. And
And I
what
don't have
year
to
was
fight
that?
anymore. That decision was rendered in September of 2023.
Wow, so you have been fighting that long.
It's
That's
been a long
incredible.
road. Been a long road.
And can I ask, when you did get separated and you tried to just make it through getting your education and joining the corporate world, were you still kind of like white knuckling it and
Oh yeah.
self-medicating? Like,
A
how are
lot of
you
drinking,
coping?
a lot of drinking, a lot of hooking up. I joined a business fraternity in college, and at our chapter, they'd give out awards every semester. And all 3 semesters that I was in, I was awarded Blackout King,
Oh,
which
God.
is like, how awesome is that? I mean, come on. You know, I wasn't just like this raging alcoholic party animal, dude. I was struggling and just nobody knew, you know. You know, most people didn't even know that I was a veteran. I didn't share that. I hid it for 15 years. But there was a lot of drinking, a lot of hooking up. I've been with a lot of women. I remember there, when I was pledging that business fraternity, it was co-ed. So like my pledge class was 13 and it was me and one other guy, the rest were girls. And we had this going around the room one time asking these personal questions. And this question that I was asked was how many girls that I've been with. And I didn't want to answer the number. I'm like, no, come on. You can trust us. We're all like business fraternity brothers, blah, 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 blah. Okay. I'm like, fuck, okay. And so I shared the number and there were a couple of girls that I was like interested in, and I shared the number, and that squashed any chance of that.
Was it just like crickets?
They're like, I think one of them might have thrown up in their mouth. I don't know, but like, it's, you know. It's...
I understand, though. I completely understand.
You know, I've gone through phases where I smoked a lot of weed. I've gone through phases where I did that, but also a lot of phases where I don't even touch it. I haven't smoked weed and. I don't know, probably a year or two, and I really don't care to. It's just not really a part of my life.
Like, some people really benefit from it, and then there's other people where it totally derails their mental health at the same time.
Well,
so.
For me, I've got the constant constant flashbacks. It just cycles in my head like a broken record. Right. And so what I'd noticed is that if I'm smoking weed, I'm just stuck in my head, and it's even worse, right? I'm pro weed. If you want to do it, I don't give a shit. I think it should be legal, whatever. I just don't care for it. But like, some of the things that I've learned over the years that really keep me kind of together, one is meditation. I meditate like 5 days a week, pretty much every morning. It's one of the first things I do. There's that. Another is I keep my mind occupied, trying new things, focusing on things that take a lot of work. I spent 5 years writing that book. You know, hopefully it's gonna be published in the next 6 to 12 months. Well, that was hard as hell because I'm diving deep into these stories that I'm telling you, right?
Exactly.
That was really hard. Like going to China where everything was brand new. You know, I didn't speak the language. I didn't know anybody. I'd never been there. Every day was literally, it was just like that Gunny said, every day was something new. And I was like, gee, what am I going to do today? What's the big adventure? Just keeping myself occupied, because I feel like the more that my mind is, the more busy my mind is, the farther away the demons are.
I understand. How long did it take you to kind of figure out what was going to work best for you in terms of keeping the demons at bay?
I think I'll be learning that the rest of my life.
Yeah.
That's fair. You know, I mean, I got that general. My discharge was changed to general in 2018. It took almost a year for me to be able to get into the VA because there was some weird shit going on in the system. I basically had to go in there kicking and screaming that I needed therapy. And they finally were like, okay, I guess we'll talk to you. Yeah.
I hate to hear that. Ugh, I always hate to hear that.
I've had my experiences with the VA, hit and miss. Some are better than others, but some doctors are better than others, whatever. But I think overall, I think their heart's in the right place. So what is it, 2024 now? I've been going to the VA pretty regularly for about 5 years. I say regularly, like, there are periods where it's 2 to 3 times a week, 4 or 5 times a week, or it's, you know, once a week or once every other week or something like that. But I'm regular enough that I go in there and the security guards are like, oh, hey, hi again. They know me. You know what I mean? you know, like even at the VA, you know, in the last 5 years, I mean, I've gone through, I want to say either 3 or 4 psychologists have given up on me. They said there's nothing more that they can do for me. They've tried everything. I had a psychiatrist that gave up on me. I've been fortunate to have my current psychiatrist. I've been with him for probably 2 or 3 years. We get along and we talk about some real shit. He's there for me and he's not going to give up. So
that's,
you know,
amazing.
So it's hit and miss. But through all of that, you know, I've done every VA therapy that they offer. For PTSD, every alphabet soup therapeutical treatment, you know,
CBT, DBT,
all of it. You know, I've tried all these things and nothing's worked. But what things that I've gotten from them are, I can pull a few things here and there,
Right.
right? Keep myself grounded, the meditation stuff, trying focusing on being present, right? I don't drink very much anymore. It's a lot less frequent than, I mean, I was at a point one time where, just before I got in the VA, I was drinking probably 4 or 5 nights a week, like,
You can
just to
relate.
get,
No, me, it was 7 days a week. It
Yeah,
started
well, I was probably
being
there too.
Fridays, then it was Saturdays and Fridays, then it was Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Because it was like, oh, we'll go to brunch. And then next thing you know, it's like, oh, we're gonna go to quarter beers on Wednesday, and then it's ladies' night on Thursday, and then next thing you know, you're at the bars every single night. And like when you're walking in, like high-fiving all the bouncers and hugging them, and the bartenders already know what you want. It's just like, oh God. I think I have a problem. And because also in that environment, you're exposed to a wide assortment of other treats, we'll call them.
Yeah,
So it's
sure.
never just one thing.
Yeah, but
So
the thing is with that though is like that stuff is like that's coping, right?
it
Like
is
that's like,
it, it.
it's not normal behavior, right? For me, a couple of things. One is I'm writing this book because there's 20,000 men and women every year that are sex in the military. That's a fact. You can look that number up. And half of those number are men. Half of that 20,000 are men. Like, fucking A women, you guys have been like shouting from the rooftops for a long time. You guys are the Me Too movement and all these other things, right? Like, people listen, right? But the men, we don't have a voice. It's one of the most emasculating things that a male, especially a straight male, and not to judge for other people, but like in my experience as a straight male and other straight males that I've met, it's one of the most emasculating, embarrassing things you could possibly deal with. You got to live with it. Most people that I've come across, they isolate themselves. They don't not just not talk about it. I know a guy who's a male MST survivor who lived in the woods for like 10 years and somebody's property that he knows. And then after when he was done with that, he moved to Peru and lived in a hotel by himself and didn't leave the place. For the men, they isolate and they don't know who to tell because it's like the most embarrassing thing ever. So there's no voice. I'm telling my story to be that voice.
It's
I've
needed. It's
so,
very much needed.
I've been there. I've experienced it. I've lived with it ever since. I happen to be intelligent and articulate, and I have a background in marketing, PR, strategy, and I've been doing story crafting and producing and stuff like that for like 8 years now at high levels. So if not me, then who kind of thing? A, right? On the other side, the reason I was starting to talk about that from the drinking stuff, the coping stuff, on the other side of that is that you and me and everybody who's gone through something like this, any level of PTSD, right? Whether it's MST or otherwise, combat, right? Nobody's really cracked the code on how to fix it. Right? Not really. Not really. There's plenty of them out there that are like, oh, I can do this. I just try this, try this, try this. Whatever. It's just stellate ganglion block or this thing or what.
Dude, I
But
got one of those.
did you?
Yeah, I got one of those. It was so painful and then did absolutely nothing. This needle is like this big, right?
But like,
Oh my
but like
God.
there's all these different like ideas and therapies and treatments out there that people are like, yeah, this works. But like no one's really cracked the code. Like these behaviors are because we're suffering in silence. Male, female, in between. Part of what I do, what I'm doing is, A, I'm writing the book telling my story to help raise this issue even more, be a voice for the voiceless. But also, my producing partner and I are working on putting together a travel show documentary of sorts where we're looking at different warrior cultures around the world.
Oh, interesting.
Exploring rituals and ceremonies that are performed on or with the warriors when they return from battle, right? So some warrior cultures have been around for like thousands of years, and they don't necessarily have these same problems. Some of these cultures that we're finding, like they come back from battle, and there's a cleansing purification ritual or something, or there's this, or maybe they sit around a campfire and tell about everything they saw and experienced, or they're welcomed home, or we're, like, there's different things, right? They're allowed to process.
There's ways to process, yeah. Yep.
You know?
That's a huge part of it. Mm-hmm. Do you think that would be part of it? To have, maybe if it's not so much in person, but having some sort of, I guess, ritual or ceremony or something that just validates people, where
maybe
maybe. I think a lot of, from what I've heard from guests that have shared their stories, is of course the assault or event or events was horrible, but it was the after, where people wouldn't make eye contact with them. Like, you were
my harassment. Like, mm-hmm.
Right. So they said that was actually worse, because you feel broken, you're angry, you're scared, yep. you're tired because you're not sleeping, but yep. and everyone treats you like you have, I don't know, leprosy or something.
Right. So, right. Mm-hmm. Scarlet letter, that whole thing.
Yes.
You know, mm-hmm. In like, in my situation, like, I fought for 23 years right. to get any sort of indication. So, I mean, even that, just the constant battle, right? Like, I have to remind myself every day since was October, that I don't have to fight anymore. Like, I can stop yeah. fighting the military. I can stop fighting the government, you know?
Right.
I, like, what, you know, when I got that, mm-hmm. when I got those results, I was like, holy shit, like, the weight of the world, you know, kind of melting off my shoulder, right?
Yeah.
You know, those are W's, and you got to take them where you can. You know, but like, it doesn't mean anything changes necessarily. You know, you still got what you got. You still living with what you're living with, you know?
Amen.
But you can rest a little bit easier knowing that you've done everything that you could do.
Yeah.
And you were successful yeah. or whatever. PTSD has been around forever. I mean, forever. Mm-hmm. World War I, they called it like fog of war or mm-hmm. shell shock, or just kind of different variations of terms from like World War I to Vietnam. But it wasn't until the 80s that they actually medically defined it as post-traumatic stress disorder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's still kind of a relative unknown. It's been around forever, but they're just like finally like going, oh shit, this is actually something, you know? And you
that
know what I mean?
And, seriously.
Right. And science, you know, science moves pretty slow, you know, and because they, you know, they've got their process or whatever, but,
mm-hmm.
You know, I would say because of that, because of the relative newness of it being identified as its own specific thing, disorder, or whatever people want to call it. People even argue over whether it's a disorder or not. How about stop arguing over what it
yeah.
is? Let's try to figure out how to fix it. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, because I'm thinking, like, if you have pancreatic cancer or something like that, that's definitely pancreatic cancer. No doubt about it, you know? So I understand. Yeah. It's very frustrating. Yeah.
The overall newness of identifying and giving it like an accurate, scientifically accurate name, I would say that combined with speed of science. They've got some things, that some treatments and therapies that they think works, but they haven't cracked the code yet. There's a lot of work to be done.
And everyone's different, too. Everyone mm-hmm. responds to different things. I sucked at talk therapy. Like, you know how they kind of lead you or... they ask the questions that are supposed to lead you to unraveling the situation yourself. But like, if you are that far in your head, you're not unraveling anything. You're unraveling yourself trying to unravel.
Not just that, but like, you're pissed off and paranoid because yes. of whatever this guy's trying to do to you. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep. So there's, yeah. and I think
like I said, I've had like three
are...
or four, I've had three or four different therapists give up on me. So
yeah.
Know,
yeah.
It's not fun.
I've definitely been there, but when you do find that one person that says, fuck no, I'm not giving up on you, like, that person in my health or mental health care journey saved my life. Mm-hmm. Like, she was the one that fought for me to get this medication that still isn't in the VA formulary, and I've been mm-hmm. on it like 2 years now, and mm-hmm. it's been 2 years suicidal ideation free, depression free, all of that. But I hate to say it, but like, if I was still in Houston and dealing with that VA, I don't think we'd be chatting right now, which is terrifying.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, right? I mean, so what moves slower than science? The government. Right? So we're even
so
more
true.
Screwed because we go through the VA, right? But like,
so
you know, like
true.
I
That's
sit
so
here and I
funny.
think, you know, I sit here and I think like, okay, you know, what's that magic number? And they, I think, even debate this number. The magic number over the last few years was 22, right? Like 22 veterans committing suicide every day, right? Whatever number you want to argue that to be, whether it's higher or lower, it's still entirely too many.
It is. One
but,
is too many.
Right. But the fact of the matter is that stuff is happening because we have volunteered to put our lives on the line for the government. And we saw some shit or experienced some shit that will forever change us, whether physically or invisibly, you know, mentally, emotionally, whatever. They're not actually equipped to, you know, resolve those things.
Mm-mm.
Not really.
And there you have it. That was the second part of Brian's story. And I'm sure many of you can relate. I sure did, especially with the drinking aspect that, unfortunately, I think for many people is very easy to cope with drinking because it is readily available and it's also socially acceptable. Especially if you're in college in a fraternity. I really thought the Blackout King nickname was funny until I realized I probably could have been called the same, but a queen. So thank you again to Brian for sharing that aspect of his journey. And we've got one more part. I did want to let you know that if you were interested in seeing the show in its entirety, just a full episode, you are more than welcome to join our Patreon community. You'll get first looks at behind-the-scenes information and videos, as well as new offers and giveaways as they come. And then also, we have some exclusive resources just for that community. And when you join, you'll be getting a shout-out on an episode of Silence Voices of MST. And again, just wanted to ask you to leave a review and as well leave a message for Brian, just to encourage him because, as we know, it is terrifying to tell your story. And it's just as hard to relive it as you're telling it. Thank you so much to Brian. Thank you to you, our viewers and listeners. I do have one more update. So I was let go from my position at the VA. I was on a probation still. I only had about a month ago, but here we are. So if you want to hit that donate button, thank you. That would make my life a little easier trying to keep the show going. Anyway, y'all have a great Tuesday. Thank you so much for tuning in. And remember, your voice is your weapon in our fight against MST. We'll see you next time.